is when you do it right, as in we try to eliminate biases as much as possible, people will come into the high-performing zone because they feel valued, respected, and seen and heard.
My name is Katharina, and I'm the Community and Event Manager at eCulture, a company that is on a mission to shape the world of unbiased hiring. Welcome to the Oops, I'm Biased podcast. So on today's episode of the Oops, I'm Biased podcast, I am bringing you something a little different and very special. Gwen Collader is going to talk to us about inclusive leadership. She gave a keynote speech and a breakout session presentation at the Breaking Bias Summit 2023, and we are bringing you that breakout session on inclusive leadership, audio only, on this podcast exclusively. Gwen Collader is the global head of DE&I at Hexaware. She is an expert on inclusive leadership on the Breaking Bias expert panel. She's a speaker, an expert on all things DE&I and inclusive leadership. And we are very lucky to have her today. She is talking about two of the six traits that all inclusive leaders need, according to a Deloitte model. She will talk about cultural intelligence and cognizance of bias. Also, this is part one of two. So in the next episode, I will talk to Gwen directly, and we are going to cover the rest. So the other four traits that all inclusive leaders need, and I'm very excited to do that, but that is for next time. For now, I bring you Gwen Collader on inclusive leadership, part one.
Yeah, we're going to talk about inclusive leadership in this session. So let me start by asking, who leads the team? And who agrees with me that, you know, leading a team doesn't necessarily make you a leader? You can be a leader in all sorts of shapes and forms. Okay, great. So this what we're going to talk about right now is for each and every one. So during my talk on stage, I also address, you know, the challenges that we see in the business, in the world today. You know, different type of people coming through migration flows, cramped markets, customers and clients that have a huge amount of choice because of the digital transformation and the digital flows that create, you know, more options for everybody. You know, the emerging markets are changing. There is a lot of uncertainty on on the market. And DEI and more diverse people in your organization will be an answer to that, because, you know, different views, different ideas, different experiences create, you know, new stories, new answers, and new ways forward. So, you know, it's important to become also more inclusive, to make sure that we create the environment for people, you know, to feel safe and to feel a sense of belonging in an organization. So most of you probably are recruiters, people managers, I think so, right? So we all have a huge impact on the employee journey that our people have, and also on the candidate experience, obviously, that the candidates have, that you attract. So if you look at the employee journey, the first two dots in black are mainly focused on the recruitment part, and the white ones on the journey once you're in. So on the onboarding, you know, promotion, development, and also separation of employees in organizations. So, and when you are attracting more diverse people to your company, it's extremely important that you also check all these steps in the employee journey. You know, do they resonate with the people that you're trying to attract, how you have organized them today? Or do you need to make changes? Do you need to do things different? So it is also checking on, you know, employer branding. Do we eventually say what we promise in our story outside once the people are inside? Do they actually experience, you know, the fantastic speech that we give on the employee journey that we have? And do we make sure that we keep up on our promises and that we put our money where our mouth is? Very important. So I want to talk about inclusive leadership. And I find the Deloitte model very useful. Yeah, the six traits of inclusive leaders. And, you know, these touch upon, you know, the focus points in leadership that will enhance and support becoming a more inclusive leader. So let's start with commitment. You know, it's about your personal values and your belief in the business case of making this change. You know, that is important to be on the journey and to continue that in the organization. You know, encourage, being brave enough to talk about imperfections and talk about, you know, personal risk taking of making sure that people are on the journey and stay on the journey. Cognizance of bias, you know, that is our Achilles heel. You know, we have a brain, we're biased. So we will be biased ourselves, and we will have biases in our systems and the processes that we have in organizations. Always be focused on that. Curiosity, asking questions, being open. You know, it will support the different ideas and the different experiences and the different values that we are looking for to navigate the ambiguity and the uncertainty of the world today. Cultural intelligence. You know, not everyone sees the world through the same cultural lens as you do yourself. So keep that in mind when you're speaking to candidates from different countries and different backgrounds. And collaborations. You know, you need to empower people, give them a voice, and support the diverse thinking, because diverse thinking of a team is greater than the sum of its parts. It's just a quick introduction to inclusive leadership, just to trigger you a little bit to take a better deep dive into that. So today I'm going to talk about cognizance of bias and cultural intelligence. Why? Because I just like it to talk about that. They're equally important. So, but let's start with cognizance of bias. You know, this is probably not new to you, but and today we're talking a lot about bias, of course, but we have 11 million of pieces of information thrown at us at every given time, every given moment during the day. It's about the smells that we have, the things that we hear, the clothes on our body, but also me speaking, you looking at me, you know, all these triggers that we have, 11 million pieces of that coming towards your brain every single moment. But our brain is only capable of processing 40 pieces of information. So a lot of the information that comes to us, we process unconsciously. And that is where the unconscious biases are being born and being created. And, you know, those unconscious biases affect the way that we interact with people, the way that we make decisions, the way that we do work. So unconsciously, you can favor something or somebody, or disfavor something or somebody. So for instance, I studied in Groningen. You know, when I meet people that study in Groningen as well, I immediately like that because I had a fantastic time there. You know, and you exchange experiences and ha 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 ha, those beers in that bar, la la la. So, and then sort of unconsciously, immediately, you like the person and you might think the rest would be good as well. You know, so, or I like to travel. And when you meet people that are traveling as well, ooh, have you been to that country? Have you seen that statue? La, la, la. So, you know, that is also how we make connections. But unconsciously, we then favor or disfavor people that agree or not agree with you. So, and if you do that in hiring, you know, and I did that sometimes when I was very young, you know, hiring somebody that studied in Groningen, for instance, I had a fantastic time with that person because we connected. But it was a complete mismatch for the job. So I don't have to explain to you, but I think we need to talk about it, still talk about it every single time again. Be focused on your bias. So because we just have, you know, 40 pieces of information that our brain can process, it's extremely important to be very conscious of that in specific situations. So we see three situations here. Information overload, there's just a lot of information that you need to process. And your brain will think, let me make a shortcut here. Feelings over facts, you know, when I'm really passionate about something and somebody else is that as well, or somebody else is not, my bias will come into play. And need for speed. If you need to make quick decisions, business is pushing you, you know, there is a chance that you will fall back on your bias. So keep these situations, especially these situations, in mind, because the risk of falling back on biases is the biggest. And we take a deeper dive into this. So information overload. So the common biases that come into play is confirmation bias. So for instance, I think the world is flat and I have all this information. I will look for confirmation of that thought because my brain doesn't want to go deep, doesn't want to do fact checking, you know, it's just too much. So let me look for confirmation of what I think already. And when you don't do the fact checking, then you think that's the truth. That happens a lot. Also anchoring bias. If I need to find out something, I don't know, are red cars the greatest cars in the world? And I have all this information about cars. And the first thing that I read is, yeah, red cars are fantastic. Your brain probably registers that as the truth. So when there's a lot of information, take a step back and really check if the decisions that you're about to make or the things that you are believing are true. So you need to do some fact-checking when there is too much of information. Feelings over facts, you know, the example that I just gave, of course, about Groningen or traveling, but also unconsciously, you know, you prefer men because you're a man or you prefer somebody else that looks like you. It just happens. So in-group bias, you know, you belong to my group. You belong to my team. That's why I like you more than I like somebody else because you're not part of my team. That is, you know, risky. But it comes when there are feelings over facts. Negativity bias. You know, it's very, very important also to realize that your brain sometimes register something that somebody does that you experience as negative. And then immediately your brain might think you are a negative person. And then all of a sudden, you know, your brain just puts a big cross towards that other person, which is, of course, not the right way to do that. So feelings over facts, really, really important. And then the need for speed. Business is rushing you. The vacancy needs to be closed. You know, we need to have, you're waiting for 4 months. You know, we need to close this vacancy. You know, and then we can, let's start with the last one, sunk cost bias. You know, we just tend to then hire the person that we already invested the most in, the candidate that we had 4 conversations and interviews with. I think then you need to check the process as well. But if you know, if you have put so much time and effort already in that specific interview and candidate and the business is pressuring you that you take the decision to hire that one because we already invested so much time and effort in it. And the one that I find really important, and I check myself a lot on this, is the attribution bias. We judge others on their actions and we judge ourselves on our intent. I find that really, really powerful. And every time I read it, I think, yeah, I do that because we all do that. And it's really, really important, I believe, to check your biases. So all these biases that we just touched upon, they come with certain behaviors. You know, it's unconscious bias most of the time, but they come with behaviors. So they come with behaviors where you might be overlooking people or maybe even bullying people. Harass people, and people will then come into the damaging zone because people will leave. People at the receiving end of negative bias are 3 times more likely to leave in a year. They're 3 times more likely to be disengaged and to withhold their ideas. So maybe the people with the best ideas will be out of the company the soonest. By the way, this is all Franklin Covey material up till now. Just wanted to mention that. You know, it's really important to check your biases and also in our systems and in our processes, because what you also see is when you do it right, as in we try to eliminate biases as much as possible, people will come into the high performing zone because they feel valued, respected, and seen and heard. Yeah, important. So, question to you, which biases do you recognize and how do they show up in the workplace? So let's move to cultural intelligence. So years ago, I started my role in Cognizant, another tech company. And we have a lot of Indian people working there. And I was giving a presentation at Rabobank, one of our biggest clients. We had 300 people working there. So I had prepared my first D&I speech and I was in front of them and ready to go, prepared. There were 290 Indian people in the room and 10 Dutch people in the room. And I started my first question with, who thinks this room is diverse? Please raise your hand. And all the Indians raised their hand. And I was just, what? Because I prepared something completely different, right? And I was stunned. So I just threw away my presentation and I started walking around the room with a microphone, asking why they thought they needed to raise their hand. And it gave us such a great perspective of the Indian culture. It's deep, it's rich, has all these different legislations in the different states that they have. They have like a zillion thousand people living there with the caste system, the different gods they preach to. In every 1,000 kilometers, they wear different clothing, they eat different food, they connect over dance. So it was such a wonderful moment to learn and grow from each other. But I also immediately, you know, had that registered in my head that what I did was looking through my own glasses. And we do that all the time, obviously. But it was a great lesson because not only did I make that mistake, but I also immediately learned a lot from the different experience people have in the organization. And I think you as recruiters and people managers, you know, interacting with all these international talent, this is something that you always keep in mind. You know it, but you do it anyway, right? So culture is a bit like being a fish in the water. So you're just swimming and swimming and swimming and swimming. And the water is your culture. It's just there. You were born in the water, you grew up in the water, you swim in the water. It's just there. Once you, as a fish, being taken out of the bowl, you realize, oh, there might be other cultures as well, or there might be people that have a different view than me. You know, it's about our upbringing. It's about, you know, our school system. It's how you're being raised and the cultural lens that is given to you by being born in a specific country or culture. So be aware that people probably have different views sometimes when you interact with them. So I would love to talk about Aaron Meyer's book, Culture Map. Great book, right? At least I find it a great book. Very practical, very easy reading, but also a lot of aha moments, but also a lot of, I knew that, but I need to remember that a little bit more. So for those who don't know the book, Aaron Meyer is a professor at INSEAD. And INSEAD is a business university in France and Singapore. And she did a 10 years research on 100 cultures. And what she looked for is how they interact in the workplace. So how do they do business across cultures? So, and she took 8 dimensions of work. So, and those 8 dimensions are communication, leading, persuasion, deciding, building trust, disagreeing, scheduling, and giving feedback. 8 dimensions that you see in the workplace. And she studied those 100 cultures and to see where you could place them on a scale. So for example, I'm Dutch and I work with a lot of Indian people. If we think about building trust, you would have a scale on the left side is task-oriented based trust building. And on the other side is relationship-based trust building. So as an example, if you put people together in a project, the Dutch tend to build trust because I say, we're going to do this, and this is the deadline, and we're going to do that. And then in a couple of weeks, I will check if you did that. You know, and if you did that, then I trust you a little bit, and then I will open up. That is how we tend to do it in the Netherlands. If you look at the Indian population, they build trust on which university did you go to, which region were you born, because then they know the food, the dance, the religion, the everything. So they bond on relationship. You know, what is your family like? And when they have a good feeling about that, then they probably trust the project will go right. So if you put people in different people in different projects, they will build trust and all the other stuff that I just mentioned in a different way. So another example, giving feedback. You know, when we have a skill on the left side, it will be very direct feedback. And on the other hand, very indirect feedback. So if you are a person that gives direct feedback, it's not fluffy, right? It's direct, it's straightforward, very transparent. You know, who's like that? And probably most of the Dutch people in here are like that, right? And if you're more indirect, then you care a little bit, and it's not that we as Dutch people don't care about it, but the tendency is more that you don't want to break a good relationship. You know, you don't want to create a situation where somebody else needs to be defensive about themselves, right? Or create uncomfortableness for somebody else. And therefore, you choose to be indirect in your feedback. So looking at this overview, you can see all these different cultures being placed on this skill. So you see the Netherlands all the way up there. There is, in the 100 countries, one country that is more direct than the Dutch. That's the Israeli culture. They look at us and they think, quite indirect what you do. But this is interesting, right? And this is also that you need to keep this in mind when you ask for feedback in interviews or when you ask feedback for people that you lead. You know, if you have international teams, they will do it in a different way. So it's about that mix of people in a project, right? Indian people, Dutch people, and US people. And the Indian people think about the US people as very direct, you know, giving very direct feedback. But the Dutch, they say about the Americans, they sugarcoat everything. You know, we never know if it's really true what they're saying. This is called cultural relativism. So if you look at the scale, and you place the US in the middle, and nothing against the Americans, of course, just an example, you see that the Dutch look at the US as less direct. And even the Israelis look at the US as less direct, but also to the Dutch. But if the Chinese and the Indians look at the US, they see it different, right? They see them as very, very direct. So realize that in international teams, not only people respond in a different way, but also people experience cultures in a different way. Yeah, very important. So discuss some of the challenges that you face when you are interacting with candidates or people in your teams from different cultures. Who works in international teams or organizations? Yeah, so what are the challenges that you face? Anyone wants to share?
While we were talking before about the culture, I also had a bit of a thought. Like, in general, the Netherlands is a country that, really favors the expat community because, of course, 30% ruling and everything. So probably from the Dutch perspective, I'm not Dutch, by the way, but I've been living here for quite a while. So I have the feeling that a lot of times, like, the expat community is really seen as one big community where, and, you know, Dutch people, Dutch colleagues, of course, would say, okay, well, this person is going to stay with us for 2 years and it's going to leave, you know, so why would I adapt to a different culture? And it makes sense. Although, of course, being a inclusive leadership is quite important. But I experienced it myself as a team lead. Lisa used to work with me before. I think it's pretty important to be always really direct as an Italian. So slightly indirect as well, without really having to hurt the other person. I think probably the Dutch culture really manages to distinguish professional and personal, while other cultures, for example, don't. If you give a feedback about a person, it's a feedback about the person. It's not a feedback about the worker also.
So you're from Italy, right? So did you experience the first time that you entered and relocated to the Netherlands? Was it hard for you? Was it tough for you to adjust or to try to adjust to the Dutch culture, the directiveness and the way that we do things?
Yes, I'm also actually from the south of Italy, where we're even more indirect, closer to the Arabic culture. So it was definitely something that I felt really personally. And then I really, you know, like the more I was working here and when I was out of the working place, I saw that people who were really harsh with me, they came to ask me for a beer and I was like, okay. So apparently, you know, we're still friends. So I really absorbed it myself and I also gave it back. And it also helped me coping with different culture in the same way.
So important what you said, right? Because the Dutch culture, yeah, we are perceived as being very harsh, right? And if you are from a culture that is more indirect, you can take it very personally, the way that we speak and the way that we interact with people. So, I hear this all the time. You know, I got really burned down in this meeting. And after that, we're going for drinks and we're having fun. How weird is that? But yeah, we as Dutch people really need to realize ourselves that we do this. So tone it down a little bit. And the people working with, in the Netherlands then would try to keep in mind that is the way that we do it in the Netherlands. So then we can sort of meet each other halfway and build that bridge between cultures, right? Very important for the candidates that we're trying to attract to the Netherlands and the international people that we work with in our companies. But what I also would like to address is that we are more than just different. You know, we all want to feel seen, heard, understood, respected, valued. Everybody wants that. You know, senior, C-level, up to lower level. Everybody wants that. The difference is, the challenge is that whilst coming from different cultures, you look for different behaviors to find that. And that is where the clashes come. So when there is a clash or a misunderstanding, always believe and think and remember everybody wants the same. The way that we go about it and the way that we find a justification for it differ from culture to culture. So coming back to the Deloitte module, I just discussed two of them today, but you know the others are equally important and they empower each other as well. So I hope you know that you can find some time in your business schedules and also try to start to do this more in the workplace, because this will absolutely help us taking a step forward in creating more diverse and inclusive organizations. So thanks so much for listening. It was really a joy to be here today for you.